Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice. It's good to hear your voice up close enough to really be able to hear your voice.
Yes. And I think we're both about an octave deeper today, sounds like.
Yes. Tis the season.
Tis the season. Welcome back. How was your trip?
Wonderful. It's amazing.
Oh, great.
It was kind of like when people ask me how a sesshin was, you know, a sesshin where we do an intensive sitting thing for days, and it's like, how was it? And it's like, well, it was everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole range. It was fabulous. It was horrific. It was everything in between.
Yes.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yes. It's great to have you here live again.
Thank you.
And I project many of our listeners would be excited to have you here live also.
Well, I hope if that's the case, then they'll pick up those phones and call in, because it's been a while since we've had an opportunity to talk like this.
Yes.
So I hope if people are out there listening, they'll just punch in those numbers and tell me what's been going on in their lives since we last talked.
Yes. And that phone number is 650-723-9010. Again, that's 650-723-9010. Sherry's here live and would love to talk with you today. If you want to contact us when we're not on the air, you can send us an email, and our email address is openair@kzsu.org, so you can reach us that way. Also, archives of all the shows are on the Living Compassion website. That's livingcompassion.org. So check that out. Give us a call today, and we'd love to hear from you. Sherry, you have a couple of retreats coming up.
Yes. I just called and made travel plans for the one coming up in North Carolina.
Oh, wonderful.
This is, the trip... over to Africa and back is, on the way back, I was in the plane for 27 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
So that doesn't count, you know, the time in buses and things like underground to get to airports or time in the airport, mm-hmm. just on the airplane flying 27 hours. And I thought, oh, I don't want to get on another airplane in 2 weeks. And then I thought, but it's only across the country. You know, there's nothing.
Huh?
6 hours.
Huh? A drop in the bucket.
Walk in the park.
Yes.
Yeah, so 2 weeks we'll be in North Carolina at Rose Creek.
Yeah, sounds like a beautiful place. I haven't been there.
It is. It is beautiful.
Uh-huh.
You know, North Carolina. It doesn't get any more beautiful than
North
Carolina.
How could you go wrong?
Yeah. Yes. That's a beautiful time of year to be there.
Yes. Yes. And if people...
And then after that, we go to another beautiful place.
A place you've been recently.
Yeah, Esalen.
Beautiful Esalen.
I can't remember the dates of Esalen, but...
October 3 to 8th.
3 to 8th. And Krista Rippins and I are going to be doing that.
Yeah.
She's going to be doing the physical, and I'll do the mental, emotional, spiritual, and we'll be looking at strong emotion.
Uh-huh. Working with That's strong emotion.
Yeah.
Yes. So Zen and yoga together.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
It's a good combination.
A great combination.
In fact, over the 2 weeks that we were... 15 days or whatever it was that we were in Zambia, not on our way there or our way home, one of the things that we kept remarking about was how very much we missed yoga, because it didn't really fit into our what we were doing there.
Uh-huh.
And so we talked about it a great deal. We had a lot of time for meditation.
Uh-huh.
And that sort of thing, but not, we had way more time than we actually would have liked in cars and, traveling long distances, and so we would talk about yoga,
mm-hmm.
which is not nearly as satisfying as doing yoga.
Not quite the same thing.
No.
Yes. If you'd like to talk to Sherry today, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 650-723-9010. Phone lines are open here. Michael's here ready to answer your call. Sherry, we've gotten a couple email questions while you were away. On last week's show, July 6th, you said to a caller, quote, "Because if it were yours," that's the emphasis, "you could do something about it," end of the quote. The discussion was about a negative, unwanted behavior or trait the person had and was having problems dealing with or not able to stop repeating. Please talk a little more about what this means. Do we have no ownership about anything about ourselves? In this practice, do we also not identify with or, quote, own our positive traits and talents? That is, writing skills, ability to have good friendships, being loyal, etc. Thanks so much.
Well, of course, I had no idea what I was talking about then.
Yes.
But just looking at it now, that sort of thing, so somebody periodically just loses their temper and kind of goes crazy. And, then they feel bad about it afterwards, or they say something unkind. They have a habit of saying unkind things to other people. And they work on it, they try to stop themselves, and they can't, and they, you know, they do everything, and they feel bad about it, and they feel guilty, and they beat themselves up, and nothing helps. You know, they're going to therapy, they're doing everything they can. And after a while, I have to conclude, if I am that person, you know, this that isn't anything that I need to take personally.
Uh-huh.
Because if it were me doing it, I could not do it.
Uh-huh.
So that realization that this is just something that comes in, something that takes over, that feeling of I'm there, then I'm not there, this behavior is there, then I come back in and feel bad about that behavior being there, I've got to stop taking it personally because I'm not the one doing it. I'm the one who was there right before. I'm the one who's there right afterwards, but I wasn't there when it was going on. And by stepping back from it in that way, to me, it gives us the ability to have a different relationship with whatever it is. So if it were actually somebody else doing this, whatever it is, and I'm taking it personally, you know, it's my partner or my child or my whatever it is, who's behaving in a certain way, and I'm taking it personally. You know, I should be able to do something about this. I should be able to influence this and change it, fix it, and this sort of thing. I would go to meetings, you know, where they would help me see that I'm actually powerless over this, and I can't, I don't actually have the power to influence other people's behavior in that way. And so I can step back from it, and I can begin to change my relationship with it. So I can do the same thing with myself. I can realize that there's an aspect of the personality, if we want to talk about it that way, that, a subpersonality perhaps, or there's a piece of karmic conditioning that just comes in and takes over, and that I am unconscious, not present, whatever it is when that's going on. So that's a very different thing from, it's my fault, it's my responsibility, I should be able to do something about this, and if I don't, I should feel bad. What I have the opportunity to do is practice staying conscious. And I'm not going to be able to practice staying conscious as long as I'm caught up in this drama of doing something wrong and how it should be and how I should fix myself and feeling bad. That's what I do instead of being able to step back and bring conscious awareness to the situation. And as I bring conscious awareness to the situation, you know, only one thing can be happening at a time. So in order for those behaviors to go on, I have to be unconscious. I have to be not there paying attention and taking responsibility. So if I practice staying present and conscious, there's no space for that kind of thing to come in and take over. And then there's nothing to do. There's nothing to fix or change. Because there's no opening for anything to be there that causes other people to feel bad or makes me feel bad or guilty for what I, and that has to be in quotes, what I just said or did. There's a realization that these are two separate aspects and that conscious, compassionate awareness is the only thing that can interfere with that habitual karmic orientation to life that results in suffering. So the second part of that was, does that something about, do we not take credit or...
Yeah, do we also not identify with or, quote, own our positive traits and talents?
Yeah. You know, the heart of Zen is the realization that there is no such thing as I.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once we have that realization, then, first of all, positive and negative just fall away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all stuff. I always go to something like the weather. You know, if I'm going to feel good when the weather is good and feel bad when the weather is bad, then I'm really at the mercy of elements that just don't have anything to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, if I am going to feel good when there are traits present that society has conditioned me to believe are positive, I feel good when that's going on, then I'm going to feel bad when that's not going on, when traits and characteristics are there that society has conditioned me to believe are bad or wrong. I'm at the mercy of this. My well-being is dependent upon these external belief systems, these attitudes that
mm-hmm.
I've been conditioned to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And to realize that this is just stuff. If there
uh-huh.
is anything that I think of as I or me, then it's simply conscious awareness. And conscious awareness is not interested in positive and negative in
uh-huh.
the sense that one is good and the other is bad.
Uh-huh.
It's conscious awareness is just conscious awareness, and it's aware of everything as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
as we step back from that, this is me, this is who I am, this is the way I should be, oh gosh, I'm that way, I shouldn't be, I should fix my, you know, that whole separate self orientation to life where
yes.
I need to be a certain way in order to be all right, that self-improvement kind of way of being in life, if that falls away, what difference does it make?
Mm-hmm.
It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just all becomes kind of silly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. What comes up for me as you were talking was a sense of the illusion of control over how I am in the world.
Yes.
That if I could just keep these good traits out there and take care of the other ones, then
yes.
I'd be in control and I'd be the right person.
Yes. And of course, from a Zen perspective, all of that is just a fast track to suffering.
Yes.
Because what it's based on is this illusion of a separate self.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no such thing. So
mm-hmm.
how can an illusion have control? How can an
mm-hmm.
illusion be something that is going to bring any kind of satisfaction? Ultimately, we're going to realize that it's an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And suffering is inevitable.
Yes. Sherry, we have a caller on the line here.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening. Beth.
Or maybe not.
Beth, are you there? Beth, are you there? Open Air with Sherry Huber. All right, I see some other flashing lights here, Sherry. So,
maybe Beth is one of those.
Yeah. Well, maybe she'll call back. I see Michael frantically pressing buttons over there, so I'm sure he's getting our next caller. Let's try again. I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Now we're talking.
I have this thing whenever I deal with the monastery, I tend to either lose my keys or lock them in the car. Which just happened in going to call you guys.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you. So there's some kind of connection with the monastery and losing keys and locking them in your car?
Yes, it's kind of exhibiting, it's like it's the pattern. I've done
uh-huh.
it a few times now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. just seeing a monk is enough to, seems to be enough to cause this to happen.
Wow. Wow, that's astounding, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a question about perception, perspective.
Uh-huh.
Somebody was telling me it's like if you kind of look at the world in a friendly sort of way, then friendly things kind of tend to happen. But
uh-huh.
like if you kind of see the world from a little bit more depressed place, you know, more depressed things tend to happen.
Uh-huh.
And immediately I translate this into change your attitude.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting a little confused on, you know, do you kind of stay with the depressed place because, you know, there's stuff to be learned there, or do you attempt to just have a different perception?
Okay. So now, first of all, I can't tell if what you're saying is, if what this person was presenting to you is that if you are happy, it actually makes happy things happen in the world.
Like you draw that stuff to you.
Yeah, okay. Now, this is one of the scariest notions of the New Age to me.
Okay.
Okay, so that one's attitude actually creates reality. Not in the sense that if I'm happy, I project happy around me. Okay, I'm happy, so I project other people are happy. I think everybody's having a good time. I tend to see happy people. Okay.
Right.
What that the other perspective is saying is, no, if I'm happy, I literally create happiness in the world around me.
Making me very powerful.
Yeah, very, very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Now, at any point in the day, what I am experiencing, I am projecting, and so I would tend to focus on what reaffirms or confirms my attitude, right? So if I'm walking around and I'm unhappy, then I'm going to notice things that I interpret as unhappy.
So it's
which
more
is not the same as I'm making people unhappy or events unhappy or somehow
or drawing that stuff to you.
I'm drawing that stuff to me.
Yeah, kind of more karmically, you know, laws of attraction.
Right.
If
I mean, that would be pretty fast, wouldn't it, if I decide I'm going to go to the shopping center and on my way I'm drawing people to me who are, you know, I picture the sort of chaos that the universe would be in as everybody is drawing all of these things toward them.
Yes.
Can you picture it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are all of us driving down the road, and we're all drawing all of this stuff to us at the same time. It'd be very busy.
Yeah.
So to me, a more helpful way of approaching it is to look at how the process works, to look at what I believe about how all of this works. So instead of the choices are, I am drawing things to me because of my attitude, and therefore, if I don't like it, I should change my attitude. Yeah, I'm drawing this stuff to me. If I like what I'm getting, I should strive to maintain the same attitude. Okay, I don't like it, I've got to change the attitude. How about just watching how all of that happens? How about just identifying, and again, that has to be in quotes, but it's pretty close to that. How about focusing on conscious, compassionate awareness and just noticing how things work?
That makes sense.
It's so much easier.
And it's also kind of like being happy with whatever comes up. Like
taking
your happiness from something external.
When we're identified with conscious, compassionate awareness, the awareness is the source of our life experience, and it doesn't actually matter what the content is. So if being aware is what's interesting to you, It doesn't actually matter what you're aware of. It's the awareness that's interesting.
Yeah, and I can see where, like, being worried about what I'm drawing to me keeps me on an identified level.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So there's a constant self-consciousness, a self-scrutiny. Somebody is in charge of judging and deciding. It's a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was interesting for a couple of hours. Kind of working through this idea and then getting kind of really twisted in my head, you know, and where it all fits in, and then I'm in my head.
Yeah. It's not good. What it's creating is an illusion of a separate self who is going to be in charge of monitoring your life.
Yeah.
And that's an unhappy place.
Yeah, I can see that. that makes a lot of sense. Well,
good.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Sherry, it seems valuable to be what you said about being interested in awareness rather than the content of what we're aware of.
Mm-hmm. Because there has to be somebody there doing the judging and analyzing and comparing and monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the source of suffering right there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's so interesting. I know I say this all the time, and that's because it's always interesting to me. This idea that we have, this conditioned belief that we have, that there is a right way to be living life, and that our life experience is going to be the one we want if we can figure out the right life to be living.
Uh-huh.
Now, that is just a guaranteed result of suffering.
Uh-huh.
That process can never end in anything other than suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it's so deeply ingrained in people.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the joy in life comes from being with life, not in being identified with somebody who's standing outside life, deciding is life being right or wrong. You know?
Yes.
I mean, it's just, you're just going to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Throws a monkey wrench into this idea of I'm going to be the right person and I'm going to make the right choices so that I have the experience that I want.
Yeah. That whole process
mm-hmm.
will never go anywhere except to suffering. Because the person who is engaged in that is not alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And only life brings joy.
Mm-hmm.
Stepping outside of life in order to be right is just not going to be a happy time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Sherry, the phone lines are still ringing here.
Very excellent.
I'd like to welcome Paul from New York. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
Hello, Paul.
I have a mystery that I'm hoping you can help me shed some light on.
Wonderful. I love mysteries.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm starting to develop a taste for them myself.
Uh-huh.
So, let's see. I was working in a job that I really wasn't enjoying, and so I quit that job. And I've been taking some time off, and I had thought, you know, going into taking time off, that it would be wonderful and relaxing. And it's certainly been interesting.
Uh-huh.
And there are relaxing times.
Uh-huh.
But overall, it's a lot more stressful than I thought it would be.
Uh-huh.
Just, and all I'm really doing is doing, quote-unquote, what I want to do.
Yeah.
Reading books, I don't know. I'm learning piano. I'm studying languages. Should all be fun.
Uh-huh.
But it seems kind of, sometimes it gets kind of driven. And I'm trying to untangle the mystery of why I'm not just sort of having fun.
Yeah. it really goes along with what we were just talking about, doesn't it? Yeah, because we forget that. So I'm there idealizing whatever this is.
Uh-huh.
And I forget that I'm still going to be me.
Yeah.
So people think, you know, if I just find the right relationship, if I just find the right job, if I can just have enough money, if I could just do what I want.
Yeah.
And we forget to add that thing of, I will still be me.
Mm-hmm.
That there isn't actually an external that's going to change my life experience.
Right.
So it's helpful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful to see it.
Well, certainly I'm what's in common between, you know, me working and not having a good time and me not working and not having a good time.
Yeah, yeah. And the source of the not good time is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so, sure.
How would you describe it? How does it manifest for you?
I haven't thought about the connection, but I've noticed that one of the things I do seems to be making lists of things to do or little things to buy and then trying to go through the list.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like this quest for completion. Mm. Like, there's this little part of me that says, once I'm done with that list, then, you know, I'll feel really good.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. It doesn't seem to work out that way.
Yeah. Well, then that's that, you know, it trips us up all the time. As soon as, when, if only, you know, all those, my well-being is out there in the future.
Yeah.
And, of course, then I get to that future. Okay, I've just checked the last thing off my list, and son of a gun, I don't feel the way I was told I would feel.
Yeah.
And so not falling for that is huge. You know, that realization that the way I'm going to feel then is the way I feel now.
Right.
There is no then in which I'm going to feel different from how I'm feeling now.
Mm.
So if I want to feel something, I need to feel it now.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a sense of completion. Good, then I need to feel it now.
Mm.
And that way, if I die before I get through that list, I will die having the feeling that I want to have.
Mm.
But it sucks us in. We're just so... Everything in conditioning is designed to put us exactly where you are.
Yeah.
You know, everything is out there. When you accomplish that, when the weekend comes, when vacation mm-hmm. comes, when this event happens, when that event happens, and when the time a child starts school, I guess for a lot of them sooner than that, but certainly school is designed to take us to that place. There's always the thing that you're looking forward to.
Yeah.
Sad. Because it's such a, at least in my experience, it's such a difference from childhood where the structure of society isn't being imposed.
Yeah.
You know, where you're just out there and you're just playing. And you're not playing for any reason. You're not getting anywhere. You know, you're just playing.
Yeah.
And then we...
Oh, go ahead.
And then we get sucked more and more into that, the goals and the future and the satisfaction is going to happen. And by the time we're adults, you know, you meet so many people and all they're looking forward to is retirement.
Yeah. It has a treadmill feeling to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very sad.
So what I'm trying to do in the meantime is I sit twice a day and I'm just trying to notice what these patterns are. Is that the game?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, within that game, there are other games that you can play. So if you know how it is that you want to feel,
mm-hmm.
then you can practice feeling that.
Okay.
There are things like, I would say the common thread between being at work and not being happy and not being at work and not being happy is dissatisfaction.
Right.
That's the driving force in almost everybody's life, dissatisfaction. So to practice finding dissatisfaction, where is it in your body? Where do you feel it? And what do you do? What are you conditioned to do as a result of feeling that? So you can look for dissatisfaction,
yeah.
And then you could look for satisfaction. So what does it? What would you feel like when you got the list completed? You know, what is that going to feel like? Can
right.
you feel it right now? When you can feel it right now, then you're home free.
Right, right. Then I don't have to go to this crazy pursuit of the list.
Yeah. Yeah, then you're free to do whatever you want to do.
Right, right.
Because you already feel the way you're going to feel after you complete it.
I actually did that one day last week. I kind of went on strike from doing nothing or from
uh-huh.
doing, quote-unquote, what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I did what I really wanted to do, and it was fun.
Yeah.
It's sort of ridiculous. I kind of feel silly sometimes about, like, this should be a much easier thing to just be at home and doing what I want, but I don't know, for me, I find it difficult.
Well, and if you notice, just, you know, that out of the corner of your eye business,
yep.
watch how you're getting that information.
Huh.
Because dissatisfaction doesn't exist on its own.
Huh.
You know, dissatisfaction isn't actually built into life.
Yeah.
It's built into self-talk. So there's you're getting information all the time
yeah.
about how you are and how this is and what it means and how it should be and how it could be and how it's not.
Mm.
And it's a very similar process to the one that went on while you were working.
Right.
The one that made you dissatisfied with your job.
Right.
And now, there it is. So dissatisfaction, that's what keeps that illusion of a separate self at the center of the universe. It's the most powerful tool that ego has for taking your life away from you.
Hmm. Interesting.
So as you're going along, just to start questioning, you know, how do I know that? It should be easier. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, what's wrong with the way it is? Why do we need to assume it should be different from how it is?
Huh. Interesting. Thank you, Sherry.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Let us know.
I will.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. I'm excited today to have Sherry back with us live after her trip to Africa. It's great to have her back on the air here. The phones are ringing, keeping Michael busy. Phone number is 650-723-9010. Call us. We'd love to talk with you. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the air in a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. It's great to have Sherry with us live today. Great to have you back, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, I wanted to clarify for people, it can sound like you're having sort of a sub-personality crisis there.
Uh-huh.
That there are actually two Michaels in the studio.
That's a good point.
that's a
really...
You're not talking about yourself
uh-huh.
as if you're someone else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There's Michael, the host, and Michael answering the phones.
Yes.
And Jay, our engineer, all doing great jobs.
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
I just wanted to
thank you.
Let people know, especially somebody tuning in for the first time, that you haven't taken this sub-personality thing too far.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Sherry, the phones are ringing here. I'd like to welcome Aaron from Seattle. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello to all the Michaels, and hello to Sherry.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just listening to your last caller, and a lot of what he said sounded very familiar to me.
Uh-huh.
And how it comes up for me is being productive. I feel fine if I've kind of have a path or, you know, a reason to exist or something to produce for that period of my life. So, you know, for most of my life, I was in school growing up, and then I got my first job, and then I traveled a bit. And it was when I came back and I had stopped traveling, and I really didn't know what I was going to do next, that I felt this extremely uncentered feeling. Mm-hmm. And it was only, you know, I got my next job eventually, and then I felt grounded again, and I could kind of relate to the world. You know, the common question, oh, what do you do?
Uh-huh.
And now I could answer that.
Uh-huh.
And I've just noticed it again recently, thinking about either changing jobs or if I decide to start a family, how to think about my own perceptions of parenthood as still being productive, but not in the kind of working world sense.
Uh-huh. So what you're really talking about, I would say, is identity.
Yeah.
Yeah? So it's like, who are you?
Yep.
And without a sense of a role, a specific role to be fulfilling, then there isn't a real sense of you.
Right. It's like I'm made up by what I do.
Yes. And when that's not there... you were describing an uncentered feeling. I was wondering if we labeled that anxiety, if that would work.
Yes, it would.
Uh-huh.
'Cause just recently, when I was thinking about, you know, I was getting fed up a bit with some things going on at work, and I thought, well, I'll just quit this and get another job. But that was, I started to feel very anxious about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, without lining the next thing up.
Yeah.
Or knowing what my next step was, I was reluctant to kind of leave the status quo, even if it wasn't that good.
Yeah, because what's going to happen to you?
I'll be lost.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's very real for an awful lot of folks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we look at people's lives, and an awful lot of people are doing what they don't want to do.
That's true.
Now, at least a lot of people are complaining about what they're doing. So I can only guess that that's a result of not doing what they want to be doing.
Right.
And yet they do it because of the anxiety that arises, the fear that's there, if they consider not doing it. Because who will I be? What's gonna happen to me?
Right.
Yeah. And of course, go ahead.
And just to hear Paul say that now he's doing what he wants to be doing, but yet he's not feeling that great about it.
Yes.
Like, I feel when I had that time off, it wasn't like, oh, I'm really enjoying my time off. It was, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do next?
Yeah. And we hear stories about any number of people who they live their whole lives for retirement. They retire and die.
Yeah.
But they retire and get sick.
Right.
Yeah. And the speculation that a big part of that is a loss of identity.
Yeah.
The idea is, but I don't want to be doing what I'm doing now. I'm only doing it because I have to, because I need to make a living. When I don't have to do that any longer, when I'm free to do what I want to do, then I'll be happy. And what people haven't faced in that is, but I don't have any identity in not doing. I don't have an identity in doing what I want to do.
Right.
In just being happy with me, being going around in the world being alive. There's
right.
no identity in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, I think that would be a really fruitful pursuit. Learning to find that sense of identity outside of doing.
Yes.
Now, the reason that, from a, you know, Zen perspective, the reason that that's so threatening that we're all the time talking about, egocentric karmic conditioning equals doing. They're really the same thing.
Okay.
And that being at center is a question of being. So at center, there's no need to do. Now, it doesn't mean you don't do. It's just that the doing is more along the lines of life just living, like we were talking about a minute ago with little kids. Right. You know, they're just being. They're very, very busy. They're going around and they're playing all the time and they're doing all this stuff, but they're not doing anything. They're just being.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because so, it's almost irrelevant what the doing is at
exactly.
that point.
Exactly. So if they could answer the question, it would probably be something like, you know, you say, what are you doing? Well, I'm being alive.
Yeah.
That's all. Okay. But once we leave that state and we are now seeking to maintain an identity, the identity is egocentric karmic conditioning because I've left my authentic self.
Right.
Now I've got to be somebody. And the only way to stay outside the moment, keep that identity spinning, is by doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we constantly have to be doing, planning to do, reviewing what we've done, getting a report card about what we've done or haven't done, getting beaten up for having not done enough.
Yeah.
So what we're really talking about in this is, in this whole identity issue, is dropping the identification with egocentric karmic conditioning. Learning to simply be able to be.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Right.
And you don't have to quit working in order to practice it.
Yes, I'm sure I could get lots of practice every single day, every moment.
Yes. Now, back to starting a family, I think, of course, that that's one of the huge reasons that people want to have children, is because it brings us that possibility of revisiting an experience that we recall from our early life and treasured, but seems gone, now not available to us as adults.
Yeah.
But when we're around children, we can move back into that place again.
Well, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and often people will try very hard to protect in their children what they don't want to actually get very near in themselves.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you have an example of that?
Yeah, that people want to protect their children from the craziness of life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they want them not to feel pressure or stress. They want them to be able to be children. They want them to just enjoy all of those kinds of ideas.
Right.
And where does that come from in us? Because, as we've established this evening, in ourselves, it's very threatening.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in that place, but I want my children to have that experience.
Right.
And then I can sort of live it vicariously through them.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I don't really have to go there myself.
Right.
Because my job, what I'm doing, is providing for them.
Right. And they do their role really well.
Yes.
Even though it's difficult for me to imagine being in that place.
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah. So you can practice letting go of that identity. Now, the way we can practice it is very concrete, and it's in When You're Falling Dive. Those are the steps that we lay out. So you're going to be in a situation, and the voices know that you have to do something. You have to be somebody. You have to. Okay, so you're thinking about changing jobs, and the anxiety comes up.
Yeah.
Okay, and you just watch the anxiety. And what does this have to do with having a job or not having a job? Of course, you very quickly realize it doesn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
Okay. So now I'm going to practice just going into this place and just staying there. So I think I'm going to quit my job. And there comes the, you know, the jolt of adrenaline, and the anxiety just gets stuck there in the solar plexus in the third chakra. And it's just, now the voices are kicking in, and what about, you just watch all of that.
Yeah.
Okay? You just watch it until it calms down. Then you think again, I think I'll quit my job. And just watch it kick in again. Okay? And pretty soon, that becomes kind of entertaining. And instead of that feeling, those sensations driving you into action, they become a source of kind of entertainment.
Yes.
In a perverse sort of way.
Yeah.
Can you picture it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you go along, you begin to separate yourself subtly from that egocentric karmic conditioning, from that need to do, from that fear and that anxiety.
Right.
And you realize that what you're identifying with is the awareness that's just observing that process happen.
Yeah, yeah. So that process doesn't become the whole reason for action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, you'll sit there and think, if I leave this job, what if I can't get another one? Right? And you'll be able to be very calm, and you'll know if that happens, it'll be fine.
Right.
Something will open up. You have no experience of not being all right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, great. This was, I think, very helpful and good suggestions for me of what to practice.
Good. Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it really is. Rather than being driven around through life by these unexamined sensations in the body, to just go on the offensive. You know, okay, what is this? If I'm going to be driven around through life, I want to know what's driving me.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good.
Well, I hope I learn.
Yes. Oh, you will. Absolutely.
Thank you
no
very much.
No doubt about it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Aaron. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. It's great to have Sherry back again live this week, and lots of callers. Isn't it great, Sherry?
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to hear from people.
Yes, yes. We've got about 10 minutes left here. Sherry, the phones are still ringing.
Let's see who's on them.
I'd like to welcome Karen from North Carolina. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey.
Hey.
Good evening.
Hey, welcome home.
Thank you.
Ah, it's so exciting. I can't wait to hear all about it. I listened to the program last week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was very good. Listening to all of you talk about your experiences there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was something.
Ah.
And it's fun to be here. And was that just last week?
Uh-huh.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
My gosh, yeah. It seems so long ago and really, truly very, very, very far away.
Well, yeah.
All of us huddled around that speakerphone. And
yeah. Well, just the time I've been on hold from when I dialed the number seems like a long time ago, very far away. Just on this conversation, so, I mean, that seems ridiculous, but I know the feeling.
Uh-huh.
But I just wanted to say hello and welcome back, and I know there's not much time left in the hour, but if there's some things you would like to share with us about the trip, you know, when I just love this show tonight and talking about the habits of conditioning and being identified with awareness, who's looking at all this and for me, it's a way to end suffering.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I'm drawn to go to Africa and do the work, and I still need it put into context sometime. Like, I can project what there is to learn, but, you know, I would love for you to talk about your experience a little bit more in that drift.
Yeah, because it's interesting. I find I mentioned that it's like being asked how was the sheen,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. it's so huge that mm-hmm. there's really kind of no way to put it into words.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talking with Jen this afternoon. She and Alex actually flew back a day after I left, and she was telling me that they were stuck in the Johannesburg airport for about 9 hours,
mm-hmm.
and at some point along the way, she ran into this young woman who is actually from Botswana. And I don't know if people, if you're familiar with the series, the number one ladies detective.
Oh yeah, I am. I got two for Christmas.
Okay. All right. So let me get the number one ladies detective agency. And it's a series of books by Alexandra McCall Smith. Mm-hmm. And so we were given copies of these, and most of us read them as we were, you know, making our way over there and then back. And I really would recommend that anybody who wants to know what it's like would read those books.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really does capture the feeling of Africa. And I think, that part of Africa, and it's in a way that we as Westerners can sort of glimpse, can sort of get a feel that this explains kind of how these people are and who they are,
mm-hmm.
In a way that is difficult for us when we just get there and start projecting onto people as we tend to do,
mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, when we were talking last week, you know, we mentioned that the statistics we heard are that 3 out of 5 people are affected by HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, looking at that, thinking, well, that can't be possible. First of all, you're not seeing a lot of sick people. And so, you know, that must be a mistake. And then being there and talking with people and getting to know them and realizing those statistics may be wrong, but they're probably wrong in the other direction if they are wrong. It's probably more than 3 out of 5 people. And yet, within that, there is such a feeling of like a gentleness, a sweetness, an inherent kindness, a way of being with other people and relating to other people, a sense of community and participation that is, it's just kind of awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point I started making this list, and because I was thinking, in the United States, we have nothing to complain about. And when I say that, I don't mean if we complain, it makes us bad, selfish, rotten, horrible people, and we should feel guilty. I mean, we have nothing to complain about. Nothing to complain about. And so I was making this little list in my mind. Like, you know, you can brush your teeth in the tap water. You can walk into a building and turn the lights on. You can pick up a telephone and it dials. You know, things like this. You can walk down a lane or along a sidewalk or whatever, and you can see water running along, mm-hmm. and you can know that it's somebody has been watering the lawn too much. And what you can know is there's no cholera in it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's about building one's sense of expansiveness.
Yes. Yes.
Aware of all that is going on in the world.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And to realize how little much of the world has and how beautifully they enjoy the little that they have.
Right. Yeah. Well, go ahead. Mm, well, that's the way the evening started. It was the life that joy brings, the joy that life brings.
Uh huh.
That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah.
It's not the content.
Yeah. Well, and to not have so many expectations
mm-hmm.
that we're constantly disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when life is very, very simple, then the things that are there are really seen as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
But when we, sometimes I think when we have so much, our expectations are so huge. And I was talking with a fellow in the airport in London, because he was talking about being on this trip and getting stuck for 24 hours in an airport because, and this was in the U.S., because computers were down. And he was saying how, you know, difficult this was for people, that they're just stuck in an airport. And I was saying that one of the difficulties for us in this country is that we expect things always to work. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty is they usually do. So when they don't, it's tremendously difficult for us. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a place where nothing works, then when anything works, it's just kind of miraculous. It's truly amazing. So Jen was, anyway, I think I started out talking about how she had met this young woman, and the young woman said to her, you know, I really hope, because they were talking about the work that we were doing, she said, I really hope that you don't encourage people just to send money. I really hope that you'll encourage people to come here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jen said, well, that's the whole point of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole purpose of this. Yes, it's to help these children, and yes, it's all of that, all of the work that we're attempting to do there. But the main thing we want to do is bring people there so that people can have an experience that is so outside our culture and so sweet.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, so outside our culture.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's so easy for us to lose sight of the really simple joy that life itself brings. Mm-hmm. We get so far away from life. All of our expectations and our privilege, our stuff, you know, gets between us, between our hearts and life. And I think to have the opportunity to live in that kind of simplicity and truly for us in the first world, deprivation really makes us stop and realize how extraordinary our lives are.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And it's not because of all of our stuff.
No, it's like I can just project that. I mean, we are the real recipients in that exchange.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yes. Sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really great this time. We've already planned the next trip for July of next year, and I feel like having made this trip, we really can take people over there and know how to keep people safe.
Uh-huh.
And that's very important because it is dangerous. It's not dangerous in the sense that life is dangerous in the United States. You know, it's not a violent danger. It's mosquitoes that carry deadly diseases and, you know, water that is not clean and those kinds of things. So I think we can take people over and help people to feel safe and comfortable and just as we have fall in love with this part of the earth and with these just extraordinary people who inhabit it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, real soon.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night, Michael.
Good night, Karen. Thanks for joining us, Karen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Coming up in just a moment here, we have DJ Chuck with Radio Mundi. He's got some great world music. And then at 9 p.m., we have the Bard of Euphony. You've been listening to...
Since I left, has the schedule changed?
We have a substitute DJ tonight.
Oh, a substitute. Okay.
Special.
I was I was primed for what you were going to say next, and you didn't say it. So, those expectations again.
Yes, DJ Decca will be back next week.
Oh, very good.
And I've been told they both have some great world music selections.
Oh, I bet.
So stay tuned. Sherry, it's been great to have you live this week.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I want to let you know that we are working very hard to get, we have wonderful pictures, both snaps and videos of our trip, and we have a lot of fabulous music. So are we completely out of time?
Nearly.
Okay, well, I'll say it quickly again. The one thing that happens everywhere we are, just about any time of the day or night, you can hear music. And it's not like here, where it's, you know, coming from somebody's radio. It's people making music, playing drums and singing and that sort of thing. And we recorded so much of it. So we're putting together a CD.
Oh.
We want to get the pictures up on the web as soon as we possibly can.
That's exciting.
We're very excited to share with you about all of this, show you the pictures of our 8 kids and the house. And
yes.
So more to come.
That's really wonderful. I look forward to seeing it all and hearing it all.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all of our callers who joined us today, all our listeners locally in the Bay Area and on the web. Thank Jay and Michael. Do a great job in the studio here. If you'd like to reach us before next week's show, send an email to openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all the show are at livingcompassion.org. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Talk to you next week.
Good night.
Good night.